Hello and welcome to another episode of the Lewis and Kyle Show. Today, I had the pleasure of interviewing Matt McGarry. Matt has an agency where he helps your favorite newsletter operators, people like Cody Sanchez, people like The Hustle, people like 1440, people and businesses like The Milk Road, grow their email lists from big to huge to make it not in real numbers. But his minimum client size, he says in this interview, his customers already have 50,000 subscribers before they start working with him, and then he hits them with some masterful paid acquisition strategies to take them to the next level. In this conversation, we discuss how Matt got started in this business in the first place, all the way from dropping out of college and getting his first freelancing clients. So like I said, working with the big brands you've probably heard of today. We discuss the opportunities in the space, both for creating newsletters and for different agency services you can provide to businesses relative to all of these trends. And if you've listened to the Lewis and Kyle Show before, you'll know that we cover a whole lot more. I'm pumped for you to listen to this episode. I had a blast recording. So without anything more from me, I'm going to switch over to it right now. Enjoy. Matt, welcome to the Lewis and Kyle Show. I'm very excited to be chatting today. Thanks for coming.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, man.
Absolutely. For those not on YouTube, this is a fun experience. This is my first podcast. I'm going to call it Ben Greenfield style. He has done a lot of podcasts on a walking pad / treadmill desk. This is my first time trying it. So hopefully that brings a new energy and enthusiasm to the interview. So Matt, I appreciate your willingness being a guinea pig for this.
Yeah, this is fun. If I were doing that, I would be like winded in 15 minutes. So I'm going to stay seated.
We'll find out. You know, I've got my first triathlon in like 10 days. So I'm just like, all training is good within reason.
Yeah, that's important.
So cool. For some context, I know you've got a lot going on. I'd say the big word, if I was to kind of say everything's related to newsletters, but how would you kind of contextualize current projects, current goals? Like, what does your week consist of working on? What projects are you moving forward? This is November of 2023 for those listening.
Yeah, I kind of have two businesses in one. So I have a marketing agency that works with newsletters, media companies, and content creators. And we help them get more newsletter subscribers and more customers. So that's called Grow Letter. So that's one part of the business. And then I also write a newsletter about how to do all that called The Newsletter Operator. So that's my newsletter that has about 12,000 subscribers. And I post a ton on social about all this stuff too. So I've built up like a Twitter and LinkedIn following of about, you know, 10 or 13K or something. So small audience, but it's all business owners. And that audience has helped me build a pretty successful agency off of the back of that. So that's what I'm doing. And kind of my week consists of the agency right now is like 80, 90% of my time. And then on Fridays and Saturday mornings, I write my newsletter. And I try and write content for the week.
Well, I can't speak to what you do on the agency side, but I can speak to the newsletter, as that's, you know, freely accessible for anyone to look into. And I'd say that's very good. I've gotten a lot of resources in there. There's a lot of good swipe files, right? I mean, I'm kind of grouping together some stuff that might be on your Twitter versus might be in the newsletter, but all sorts of like the complete guide to getting your first 1,000 subscribers, best landing pages, all like the stuff that is super helpful. I mean, it's a very tightly scoped concept. It's like, if you're a newsletter operator, it's called a newsletter operator. But as someone who does a lot with newsletters, super valuable stuff. So definitely recommend people check that out.
Yeah, it's meant to be super tactical and actionable advice. Lots of examples and case studies in there. And it's all built off of real world experience, right? So like, I used to work at a big newsletter called The Hustle. And I do this obviously for 25 plus clients. Like, everything I write is based off of that, those practices, not just theories. And there's not a lot of tactical based information on this stuff. There's a lot of like marketing blogs that are kind of written by editors and AI that are like meant for SEO, and they don't really give tangible, actionable advice. So I try and do that.
Yeah, I think that's one of the best things about newsletters as a format is they're less gamified than blogs, because it's like, I mean, and even to some extent, social media content, right? Because in YouTube, like, all of that is a game to get the most views, because it's like, you know, let me make a clickbait title or do all this stuff to get views organically. Whereas a newsletter, you actually have that platform. So it's actually like, let me just give people good stuff. And like, we can skip all that.
That's one of the big advantages to it. You don't have to play on whatever the current meta is for that platform that you're on. You still have to deliver value, of course, but the format is much more flexible. And you can give people what you want to share and what they really need, which is cool. I mean, you can't write, you know, there are some limitations, of course, like you can't have videos and you can't have massive images because that would make the file too big to send. But most of the stuff you can do, which is great.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm obviously super deep in this space in terms of like, I've been on Twitter for a long time. I follow a lot of clients that you work with. For someone who, let's say, doesn't even know what The Hustle is, you know, and so all the other brands you work with also may not be someone you know, what would you say is kind of the lay of the land picture of like the newsletter landscape in 2023? Is this like a small niche that like there's like 25 million people in America that are just kind of like into business and self-improvement and like they're into all this stuff? Or like, what is your whole kind of view of the newsletter industry and how's that different than just email marketing, which is something that sort of everyone does?
Yeah. So like newsletters are emails, but not all emails are newsletters. So the newsletter industry is definitely a small niche, but it's rapidly growing. Some of the most successful companies that use newsletters, I would call it newsletter first media companies. And so some examples would be Morning Brew, which now has over 5 million newsletter subscribers. And they sold for, I think, 75 million in 2021, I believe. And now they do over 100 million in annual revenue.
Wow.
Approximately. Another company is The Hustle, where I used to work at. They sold for about 27 million in 2020. I don't know the revenue numbers now, but it was a pretty big acquisition for them for a bootstrap company. And there's many more. Those are some of the bigger examples. The Skim is like one of the OG newsletters that started way back in the day. They probably have north of 3 million subscribers now. And there's a lot more small upstarts that have popped up in the past few years that are bootstrapped, have a small team and do millions of dollars in revenue, but are not as well known yet. There's also what I'm calling newsletter first content creators who we're seeing a lot more of. There's not a lot yet, but the ones that are doing it really well are Cody Sanchez, who has over 500,000 newsletter subscribers. Sahil Bloom, who also has north of 500,000. James Clear, who's an author and content creator. I think he has north of a million. Tim Ferriss, who a lot of people know of. He might have north of 2 million newsletter subscribers now. And it's not as widely talked about in the creator space, but email and newsletter for those types of businesses are driving most of their sales, right? And so I think more and more creators are putting the emphasis on newsletters and thinking about their creator business as being newsletters first, or newsletters at the center of their creator business. And so it's still very new. And also software has changed the game a lot, right? Like back in 2019, before Substack, it was really hard to make a newsletter. Not that hard, but for the average person, it was difficult. What helped this industry take off a lot was one, Substack, which really blew up in 2020. It made it super easy to start a newsletter. Like my mom could do it and she's not very tech savvy. And then Beehive, which really started to blow up in like 2021, 2022. Made it even easier and also gave a lot more powerful tools. And so that has helped a lot of people get into the game, right? Whereas before they had to connect 10 different tools to build a newsletter business. Now they can do it with one. So we've seen a lot more people start small newsletters in the past year or so.
When you work with a company to grow their newsletter, what is like the average kind of size and sophistication?
We work with pretty sophisticated people because we have an expensive service, right? But my content's really geared more towards beginners, helping people get their first 1,000 to 10,000 subscribers. So on the agency side, we're working with people who you normally have 50 to 100,000 plus subscribers and already have a seven-figure business. That's just really a constraint of the agency, right? Like to have a team and to charge a price that helps you maintain a business, you have to be working with large businesses already, right? So that's on the agency side. And also we're doing a lot of paid acquisition for them. So not only do they have to pay us, they also have to pay Facebook to reach more people. So we wind up working with people who have like a marketing budget of at least 15 to 20K per month. And those are usually seven-figure businesses.
That makes sense. So what was your path from leaving The Hustle to starting an agency doing this? And there's probably some things in between I may have missed.
Yeah, it was pretty straightforward, actually. So I started working in The Hustle in 2020, but 5 months later or so, we got acquired by HubSpot, which is a software company. And I think my time at The Hustle was about 2 years. So I kind of just like everybody, I got tired of my job. But working at The Hustle was awesome, but moving over to HubSpot, totally different company, different culture. And so
you were on the HubSpot team for some period of time.
Yeah. So like 5 months after I joined The Hustle, we got acquired by them. So we're still The Hustle, still a separate brand, separate business unit, but we were a part of HubSpot. And that just changes everything. Eventually, my manager changed, all my team changed, everybody started leaving The Hustle and going on the different things. And I kind of got tired with the jobs too. So I wanted to find something different. I always wanted to start my own company and I had a lot of side projects, but I did a clear path on what to do. And I just started freelancing and consulting while I was working full-time at The Hustle and HubSpot. And the first freelance client I got while I was working there was called The Milk Road. It was a newsletter about crypto. I started working with them in like February of 2022 when they were about 10,000 subscribers. And that started to work really well. We were growing really quickly. It helped that crypto was really hot at the time. This was like a little bit before the crash. The crash happened in like July and August of 2022, roughly. And I started working with them. I started working with Cody Sanchez, who's like the second client. And then I quickly got up to like two clients. And that probably wasn't a lot of traction, but it was enough for me to quit my job and start doing this full time.
Did the rest of the clients just come from, have you ever done any sort of outreach for this offer? Or it's just you're able to kind of use Twitter? Like, what was your main, it seems both, like, yeah. you know, the connection between The Hustle and Milk Road, there's a lot of like overlap in those audiences and operators. So it seems some may have come from like a warm referral or a personal network, but yeah, in terms of
totally
expanding beyond that.
My past experience in trying to find clients. So I think when I cold emailed the Milk Road, I didn't know of them, but like they knew of The Hustle, the company I was working at. And I like the subject line was like, "Hi from The Hustle" or something like that. I'm just leveraging my past experience, leveraging that authority that I have gained by working at that company to land that first client. And then for the second client, I was leveraging the Milk Road and The Hustle, because by that time the Milk Road had grown a ton. It was kind of like the popular newsletter upstart at that time, especially in crypto. So I'm always leveraging basically everybody I work with to try and get the next client. I did get a lot of referrals, luckily, from the people I'd worked with The Hustle. The newsletter industry and space is really small, so everybody knows everybody. So like when I worked at The Hustle, I had already like done partnerships with a lot of people who later became my clients, like a year later, like The Gist and Exec Summit, many others that I already just like, I've already chatted with before in a different context, but now I'm able to get them to hire me to do work for them. So a combination of like, I would almost call it warm emails because they already know of me or the company I worked for. So a combination of warm emails and referrals were what started it.
What do you think is kind of your, like what piece of the equation in, when you see your agency, is it just you or you have partners and additional people on your team that you're specifically good at? Like, are you a really good media buyer? Are you really good at making advertisements? You're kind of good at the whole equation. Like, why is it, are your clients coming to you besides, I guess, a lot of social proof and results?
Yeah. Now we're a team of 10, but originally for a long time, it was just me and basically one contractor I hired maybe 6 months into starting. I wasn't quite sure if I wanted to kind of be like a high paid freelancer or build an agency. There's kind of two paths you can go down, right? Kind of build this freelance lifestyle business where you work with like a set amount of clients and make good money, or try and scale an agency to become a 7 or 8 figure business. So now I'm going down the second path, but at first I was just kind of doing my freelance thing. So why people work with us and what we do, what we're good at, is paid acquisition. So helping people get high quality newsletter subscribers at a really low cost and helping them do that profitably. It's a very niche service, but we're the best in the world at it because there's no one who has more experience than we do. Like, that's basically my entire job working at The Hustle, was to grow their email list, mostly with paid acquisition. So using Facebook ads, affiliate marketing, Google ads, TikTok ads, and more. I did that at The Hustle. I did that for the Milk Road. I have now hired people who did that same thing for other large media companies. Like the person who's our head of growth at Girl Letter used to work at Morning Brew, which is one of the largest newsletters, like I mentioned, and Workweek, which is a really successful startup in the newsletter space. So we just have more experience than anyone out there in that space. And so like part of that's luck, but also that's intentional as well.
I think what's interesting is I think like there's a lot your average business could learn from what y'all are doing here. Because like, these businesses, for the most part, are newsletters as a business, not newsletters as a marketing channel of a business. Obviously, they monetize in a variety of ways. But like, I think a lot about Russell Brunson from ClickFunnels and like his different kind of marketing advice. And so the question is, do you ever, like, why only offer this to newsletters? Or do you think there's an opportunity for people to offer like profitable, grow your email list as a service to other types of businesses, basically? Yeah.
We're starting to work with other types of businesses, and actually the model is going to be a lot more successful with them than with the newsletter first media companies. The newsletter first media companies, like the also Morning Brew, they monetize exclusively with sponsorships. I mean, Morning Brew has some other.
They don't have the back end in the same way.
They don't have the back end. They're basically the name of that game where the newsletter is the business is I want to acquire a subscriber for as little as possible. And then over a period of 18 to 24 months, I will get, you know, $10 to $20 in advertising revenue from that subscriber. And so the economics can work really good because you can acquire a subscriber for $2 or $3 and make $20 over the lifetime of that subscriber. But when the sponsorship business slows down, you're really in a tough spot. And sponsorships and like advertising in general has slowed down a lot in the last past year. What's even more powerful is if you can build a really high value newsletter around an agency or a service or a SaaS product or e-commerce, and you can drive low-cost subscribers into that who get nurtured by the newsletter every week, but also buy your product or service from your newsletter. And so instead, the newsletter becomes like a front end or a lead generation for a business that has a strong back end, especially a SaaS company or like a high-ticket service works really well. So that's the model that I actually use for my business. And I'm starting to work with more and more clients in that space. But this type of marketing channel, like a newsletter as a marketing channel, is kind of a new concept. So not a lot of people have caught on, and I still need to, and a lot of people like me are starting to talk more about it and like and just share how great it can be. And then, you know, how marketing works. Like when people see that and they see other people that have success with it, then they do it. It's still early. It's kind of like funnels were back in 2017 or wherever, like Russell first started.
I feel like in a lot of ways it is completely different, but in a lot of ways I think it's a different name. I mean, the kind of was the word for it, like the, not the journalistic style, the medium and the structure of like what a newsletter feels like is kind of, we understand them today. But in terms of like what Russell, I feel like has been saying for years is just like, get someone on your list for break even. Then you just have a big list you can sell to forever.
Yeah. There's a lot of overlap and carryover. We're just using different names and talking about things a little bit differently. You know, Russell in those funnels, like he didn't use editorial newsletters. He used lots of email marketing and email automations, but there's no editorial newsletters. And maybe we should explain like briefly what a newsletter is. And we're talking about an editorial newsletter. So this means like something that you send on a consistent basis at the same day and time every week, whether that's a 5-day a week newsletter or a 1-day a week newsletter. It's sent consistently. It has a consistent format and template, and it's focused on delivering editorial content, news or value rather than selling. And so 80-90% of your newsletter is something that's going to be valuable to readers, not a call to action. You'll still have call to actions and selling within your newsletter, but that will be a small percentage of it. And so what it does is it helps, it's a habit-based product, right? You get value from it. So you open it once a week or you open it every morning before you start your day, because it's valuable to you. And so that's the difference between a newsletter and email marketing, or like the newsletter you get from, you know, some like e-commerce product you signed up for, or, you know, like your local HOA or something. There's different types of newsletters, and it's important to define what we're talking about here. But those types of newsletters, if done well, can be an awesome marketing channel for any type of business.
Why do you think this hasn't gotten totally caught on yet? In terms of like, why isn't every business sending a newsletter?
It's early, right? So pretty much every business sends emails, and that took a long time for businesses to catch on to, but not a lot of people, like, you know, Morning Brew, The Hustle, these companies have been really successful. Not a lot of people even know about them. I'm one of the few people talking about how to use newsletters, how to write a newsletter, how to grow it, how to monetize it, how to turn your subscribers into customers. I can probably think of like 5 other people in my niche sharing the same type of content I'm sharing. So it just takes time, right? And I also think it's still like hard to create a newsletter. A lot of the email templates that you have out there when you're building a newsletter in ConvertKit or not ConvertKit, but like a MailChimp or a Constant Contact or a HubSpot, they're all built for like email marketing. They're not really built for newsletters. So like even the software products are catching on too. So it's a combination of like technology means software and education. And so once we get those two things in place, you'll see a lot more people do it. And honestly, it's okay that everybody's doing it, because that means there's opportunity in the space.
It makes sense. We kind of skipped to, you know, the beginning of your career being The Hustle, but I don't think that's totally how things played out. How did you kind of like, let's say, you know, I know you didn't finish college, like what was your path into just getting started as a professional? For when you were in college, were you studying digital marketing and media buying, or is this kind of just like, how did you decide like, this is the way I will support myself as an adult and land in the ways you landed into?
I had a weird path, because when you're young, when you're in high school and college, you're looking for these paths, these outcomes, you know, or these tracks. You know, do I want to go on like the Ivy League to like consulting track or the investment banking? Not that I even had the opportunity to do that. Or do I want to like go to the fraternity, like go into frat? Like, and so like, I didn't really find any of those paths that worked for me. What happened with me is I graduated high school in like 2016, thought I was going to go play football at a college. That didn't work out. So I enrolled in a different college, like locally here. I felt like there were lots of benefits to not going going to college and lots of downsides to continuing to go and pay for college. We don't need to get into all those. And so I wound up leaving after one semester. And so from there, I kind of had to figure things out. So I worked part-time. And when I wasn't working, I was just figuring out what I wanted my professional path to be. And luckily, I quickly found like a niche. And that niche was first the psychology of persuasion. So have you ever heard of Robert Cialdini in the book Influence? That was kind of what got me into marketing. So I luckily found that book, read that, and then went down the rabbit hole and got into other copywriting books and other marketing books. And quickly from there, I was able to say, okay, I want to learn how to be a copywriter and get paid to do that. And then from there, I got into Facebook media buying and other types of marketing. So I was fortunate to find something that I enjoyed early on and then just dive deep into that. And the way I learned it was from books, podcasts, courses, a lot of Udemy, a lot of YouTube videos, and also by doing.
How did you get those first several freelance clients just doing anything? So, you know, you read Robert's books, read some copywriting books. Like, what was your first dollar from self-study of those skills?
I went on to Upwork, and I think I basically created a profile. That's what you do on Upwork. You create a profile about something that you can do. I think what I did at the time was like copywriting and Facebook ads. Still kind of what I'm doing today. And I just like wrote out a well-written profile and started applying to jobs. And that, even though I had no clients, like I think what the hardest part is like getting your first dollar, your first client. And so I was able to get a client, even though I had never done Facebook ads before. I think I got a client on how to do Facebook ads or doing Facebook ads for them. So like I quickly pulled up some YouTube videos, some tutorials, and then kind of built their campaign while learning how to do it, which probably wasn't great for them, but I learned a lot and I kind of got paid to figure this out.
So then what did you, or I guess how long were you doing that before transitioning to like a proper full-time job rather than freelancing and Upwork, which can be very unpredictable?
Yeah, it's tough. It's not something you want to do forever. So I did Upwork for like 2017, 2018. So I think about 1 to 2 years. And then one of the clients I was freelancing for hired me full-time. This is where I got my first startup job. And this was for an ed tech company. And I was doing like user acquisition and marketing for them and copywriting. And so luckily I was able to get out of that freelancing treadmill pretty quick and like land a startup job and then another and then keep going throughout my career.
That makes sense. I'm thinking where to take this next. So with the newsletters that you work with, why do people like them? What makes them super captivating? So like, for example, they've already, before working with you, reached, you said like 50K subs. What makes them so compelling that they're growing, that they're staying consistent in terms of like the readers aren't leaving?
Yeah, I think it comes down to your newsletter has to do a job, right? And so at a high level, those jobs are like, does it inform me? Does it entertain me? Does it educate me on something? Does it solve a problem? Every newsletter has to have some type of benefit that it delivers or problem that it solves. And so I can give, there's all types of, also it's not limited to just information or just news. It's all different types of things. So I can give some examples. Morning Brew and The Hustle were great at, or are great at informing you about what's going on in the world of business and tech. And so they write a newsletter every day that basically it's published 5 days a week. It goes out at about 6 a.m. It tells you about all the news of business and tech you need to know for that day. And it summarizes everything in that huge world into an entertaining 5-minute read. So I don't have to go and score 10 different websites. I can just read this newsletter and have everything that I need. So it keeps you informed. It saves you time. It's also pretty entertaining. You'll find that a lot of newsletters are really good at tone and voice and writing entertaining written content. You can't be dry and boring. So that's one. So that's like information entertainment. The education side is another piece. So you're probably not going to have an educational newsletter that's 5 days a week because that's way too much content, right? You don't want to learn something challenging every single day. These are like the weekly newsletters. And so some examples of like really good weekly newsletters would be like a Cody Sanchez. Basically every week, I forget what day hers goes out, but she teaches you some concept about money, which is basically, to oversimplify, it's basically about how to make money. She has a unique angle on that and brings unique experience and content to it, but it's going to give you some type of benefit that you want. Everybody wants to earn more, and her newsletter is going to give you content that's going to help you do that. So it comes down to picking like what your job is and do you have a unique way to deliver that for the reader?
Yeah, and this is, I guess, what I keep coming back to. It's really the question is, what are the reasons that people, I wouldn't say buy information, because I mean, I think that would, if we just answered that question, that would get us close to the conversation that I think I'm suggesting, because not all newsletters are paid. But that's basically like people are just treating newsletters like they're different from every other piece of content. When it's just like, what are the, like you said, what are the fundamental reasons why someone follows an account on Twitter, why someone watches a YouTube video? And it's basically, like you said, it serves some human desire, right? It's the same thing of like, if you are interested in consistently learning about a thing or staying up to date on a thing, some people, you know, watch a YouTube channel for that. Some people follow a social media account for that. It's any reason that you participate in any form of consumption. It's just now people are underappreciating the opportunity of delivering those same promises and delivering that same type of value over email because of the popularity, I guess, of everything else.
Same thing, different medium, for sure. And like one I didn't talk about is discovery. And so like people value discovery too. Like there's all types of YouTube channels about reviews and luxury goods and watches and tech. And so there's lots of successful newsletters about that too. There's one that I know of that is basically just like it's a newsletter about Star Wars merchandise. It's like every day they share 10 different pieces of cool Star Wars merchandise and you get to discover new things that you're interested in because you're a Star Wars fan and you have a bunch of Star Wars merch everywhere in your house and all the t-shirts, right? So it can be anything. And so basically you can take something, newsletters translate to other things. So like you can take a successful YouTube channel and look at what worked for that and translate that to a newsletter and vice versa for any type of content format.
I actually want to ask you, you hinted at the Star Wars one. What are the newsletters that you read? Because, you know, I've for years been a very big newsletter reader and still haven't like unsubscribed from any, but I'd say only consistently read maybe like in terms of like, if I see it, I'm going to read it. Not like if I see it, I'm going to look at the subject line and decide if I'm going to read it, but just like read it no matter what. Maybe two out of like 80 that I'm subscribed to.
Yeah. I
think are there a few for you that meet that answer?
I probably read a lot more than the average because I'm knee deep in this. I probably read like 3 to 5 a week. And so a lot of those are industry specific. So like I read at least 3 newsletters about newsletters and media. One is, I'll give a few examples. Like one is called A Media Operator. And it basically analyzes the media industry and tells me what's going on. So like, you know, BuzzFeed is like selling this part of their business and like, here's why it's happening. So that's one. So industry analysis is a common one. I also really like Stratechery by Ben Thompson, which is basically analysis of the tech industry. They basically cover like the 5 biggest tech companies, Microsoft, Google, Amazon, Netflix, et cetera, and just analyze what's going on. So when Netflix, you know, publishes their earnings about the stock market, Ben analyzes that and gives me a summary of what's going on and gives me his take on it. So I like a lot of industry analysis for whatever industry I'm interested in. I like curation too. There's a great newsletter in the media space called Email Intelligence. It's basically just like a list of like 20 links about different stuff going on in the media industry. And so it'd be like, there would be a category for newsletter growth. There'll be a category for sponsorships and monetization. There'll be a category for deliverability. And it will just share different links to post on social and articles related to those topics, stuff that I wouldn't have come across if I didn't read their newsletter. So they're really good at curation. I enjoy that. That's what I read personally. But the biggest stuff out there tends to be like about business, tech, and finance. There's lots of really big, successful newsletters about what's going on in the stock market, what's going on in the real estate market. That's something where it changes literally every single day. And you need to be up to date about what's going on to make the right investments for your job or personally. And so you'll see lots of finance newsletters do really well.
I want to discuss opportunities kind of related to, you know, it sounds like you're, I don't want to say have your hands full, but you've got plenty of stuff to keep you busy and entertained and paid with just keeping the agency going and running your newsletter. Where do you think there are big opportunities to build businesses, create newsletters in this ecosystem? Like, what do you think is kind of not untapped and is it no one's doing it, but not fully tapped?
I'm very excited about B2B media or B2B newsletters, same thing. And what this means is you create content for a specific industry vertical. So I have a B2B newsletter about newsletters that a lot of people at large media companies, entrepreneurs and content creators read. There are endless opportunities. You can have a B2B newsletter about waste management, about banking, about grocery stores, about retail, e-commerce, SaaS, et cetera. There's all types of different industries and categories that you can write content about for other businesses and other business leaders and entrepreneurs. And for a lot of people, that doesn't sound very exciting. I mean, that means there's a lot of white space in it. Everybody wants to start a newsletter or a media company about sports, finance, business, and that's a very crowded space, but B2B is much less crowded. And the reason, there's more reasons than just it not being crowded, that it's a great idea. These audiences are just much more lucrative than a B2C audience that might be about, you know, finance, tech, or sports. The reason for that is because you can sell to other businesses. So you can get advertisers and sponsors that want to sponsor you, and they're willing to pay a much higher rate because they're getting in front of people who have leadership positions at large companies or people who are founders, business owners that can afford to buy expensive things for their business. It's usually enterprise software, but it can also be very expensive services. And so what this means is you might be able to sell an ad at 5 or 10x or even 20x the rate that you might sell it in a B2C newsletter. So if we're selling ads on a CPM, a B2C newsletter might see like a $20 to $50 CPM, or we can sell it a $150 or $200 CPM in a B2B newsletter. And that's just because the audience is that much more valuable. So it just makes your economics a lot better. Even though your audience size is smaller and your acquisition cost to acquire a subscriber is a lot higher, your value per subscriber is way higher too.
What do you think about different agency opportunities? I'm sure there's a lot of things you get asked to do that like maybe say no to because you're like, that's a distraction, that's not a core competency. And again, there's a whole, you're only serving segment of the market you're serving and the way that you're serving them. But what are other ways people, you know, with skills can go and offer a service related to what we've been talking about to maybe get their first freelance client or something?
Yeah, there's a lot of agency opportunities. One angle that I'll give a couple different angles. So one angle that I like is can you go work at a company who's just known for one thing? Work there for a year or two. You don't have to be in a leadership position there, but work there and understand what they do really well, and then offer that as a service for other companies as an agency. So that's kind of what I did with The Hustle. I worked at The Hustle for 2 years. I mastered paid acquisition for them and figuring out the system of how they did that. And then I brought that service I did as an employee for The Hustle, and I made that into an agency for many other businesses who wanted the same thing. And so I think there's lots of examples. You know, a company like HubSpot is really well known for SEO and content marketing. Someone working at HubSpot or wanting to work there could master that and then take that as a service. And there's all types of other examples. And a lot of it's kind of industry by industry, but like, you know, as someone who's deep in industry, what companies are great at certain things. And if you can get that company's logo on your back and master their process, you can expand that into a very large agency. So it could be anything. It doesn't have to be marketing. It could be sales, operations, IT, et cetera. Like, if a company is really well known for like having amazing security, you can work at that company, learn their system, and then start an IT security agency. So I think that pattern works really well. And I think anybody can do that. However, that's not the answer a lot of people want to hear, because that requires getting a job and working for a couple of years before you start an agency.
I think that's something people miss, is you have to be good at a thing before you can. I mean, you don't have to be good at a thing if you like work for free and then kind of stumble that way. But to charge for a thing and have happy customers, you do have to be good at something. And if you don't know where to start, just working somewhere is a place to start.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And I think another angle is like, or maybe some recommendations I would say, is you want to be close to the money anytime you have an agency. So like, you want your service to be directly driving revenue for that client, or at least you can be as close as you possibly can. I'm not as close as I would like to be, because what we do for a lot of clients is we provide them with subscribers and audience, but then they have to go and sell sponsorships to monetize that audience. And so it would actually be better if we were selling sponsorships for them.
Yeah, I think that's one of the biggest lessons I've learned in kind of my past 1 to 2 years in the agency journey, is it's just way harder to sell something when you're far from the money. Because it's like, why is it worth my time to take your phone call? And like, we were doing a lot of IT services and building analytics, which is super amazing, but really something we are only able to sell to a super solution aware customer. They're like, I need this, and no one on my team knows how to do it, and I need it, and can you do it? And then I say yes, and that's a sale. But it's like, hey, saying to a business who doesn't know that they need this, do you want this? They're like, is this going to make me more money? And we're like, well, if you have the data super organized, you can have an analyst look at it, and he's probably going to find an opportunity. They're like, that's too many steps, I don't care. And so that's a lot of the reason that I've started the new offer I've started, because it's like, hey, we're going to make your more people aware of your offer more times, which is going to lead to more people buying. And they're like, oh, and that's kind of why I think marketing agencies are still, you know, 2023, I use a very millennial term, but the goated, right? It's like the greatest way to just start as an entrepreneur, because it's like, you tell anyone, hey, here's how I'm going to make you more money. And if they have a reasonable sense of belief in you, then they're going to let you try.
Yeah, that's why there are millions of marketing agencies, right? Because people need that service. And also, I think another thing that helps is like having a high LTV. So like, be close to the money and also work for clients that have a high LTV. They're selling an expensive product or service. That helps too. If you're working with a client who's selling something that has a customer lifetime value of $10, they're selling a pen, it's really hard to do marketing well because your acquisition cost has to be so, so low. And so if you can master those two things, that's perfect. And it really comes down to math. Like, the way clients are thinking about it is, if I pay that $5,000 a month for this service, how is this going to help me make an additional $20,000 per month? Like, what's my ROI on this? And so like, if you can prove that with the service and with the offer you present to people, you can build a great agency. But yeah, it has to come down to that. You can't really trick people into hiring you.
So what are you thinking medium/longer term? Like, where do you see everything you're doing going? Like, what is the direction that you're building towards?
Yeah, I'm finally at the point, you know, agencies take time to scale up, as it's all with people. And so I've been very much focused on building an awesome team the past maybe like 3 months. So I'm finally up to like a team of 10 or 11 people. So I'm doing that. I think I'm taking this from really my goal for the next couple of years, taking this from a 7-figure business where it's at now to an 8-figure business. And more importantly, not just about money, but to the point where it's a business that's not just about me and it can grow and function without me. So I'm at that point where every agency operator has this problem, and I'm trying to solve it too. But I'm
building bottleneck
systems to do it. Yeah.
It's a fun place to be. It's like, oh shoot, I'm the problem. I'm the reason we're not growing. How are you tackling getting past that? Are you hiring like a kind of agency consultant? You just like reading, like how are you planning to solve that problem?
Yeah, actually I do have a coach who's very expensive, but very much worth it, that I pay thousands of dollars per month to help me do these things. So that's one. I probably need to read more books on this. Like, I've heard Built to Sell is a great book. I'm only like 10% through that right now. That really applies to, is really written for agencies, that book. It talks about removing yourself as a bottleneck. but I'm in the early stages. But it's basically just hiring great people, paying them really well, and getting the coach to guide me through the process.
Yeah, I have a two-parter here. There was a newsletter from Cody actually a few weeks ago where she talked about her experience hiring Jordan from HubSpot as her coach. And I thought it was a really good issue, and I liked it. I think a common criticism, not like a reasons criticism, but like a super philosophical criticism. I don't know if you follow Nat Eliason on Twitter, but he put out some content like kind of to this effect the other day, where he's like, how many newsletters or tweets do you like remember like for a long time? Obviously, there's like infinite counterexamples, right? Like the Naval thread that turned into the Almanac of Naval kind of became a very memorable tweet, like historically, and that like is really seared in people's memory and like genuinely altered the consciousness around a specific topic. Whereas like a book, for example, it's like a big enduring thing, and way more people are like, oh yeah, my life changed after reading Atomic Habits, versus like my life changed after reading that one tweet or that one newsletter. I'm not really asking you to comment philosophically on this as much as I am. Is there like a specific newsletter issue that either you remember reading or participating in sending that like had that like, whoa, like people are like talking about this for a long time, rather than this was just like yet another piece of like helpful content that people were excited about on Tuesday morning and then kind of didn't change their life come Thursday? Like a piece that you're like, people just kept talking about the this. We just sent this essay one day, set the world on fire.
Yeah, I haven't had that for my content. That's the long-term goal of what I'm working for, is to be able to create content like that. And it does, I think it just takes time. I think it takes a lot of time. Like that Naval thread was really impactful on me, How to Get Rich. And I think that comes from like decades of experience doing this. So I don't think it's hurtful along the way to publish a lot of content that's not that good and just keep getting better and better, because it is a craft you have to build. What I think about is maybe I don't have that type of evergreen content, but how do I have a greater impact on people? And so I think there's different levels of content that have more and more impact. So like a tweet can only have so much impact usually. A newsletter might have more, and you build a deep relationship with people when they're on your email list. A podcast has even more if they're listening to you consistently, and like a live event has even more, or a live stream might also have more. So like, how do I move people down the funnel of impact in relationship with me? And how do I do a good job of that? I recently started the podcast for that reason, because I don't feel like I have... Newsletters are awesome for many reasons, but podcasts can be even better in some ways because you get to know the person way more.
I think so. I want to ask, this is the, I guess, the cliche question. Maybe like the people are listening to this, like, I think it's let's say a polarizing question. I think, you know, we've discussed Twitter a lot, and I think sometimes being on Twitter puts you so far ahead that it's both an advantage and a disadvantage, because genuinely your intuition about like what is popular and what is mainstream and like this, where different things are in the hype cycle, because there's like the where something is in the Twitter hype cycle than like the collective hype cycle. It's like in many ways ChatGPT is in like the down trends on the hype cycle on Twitter, whereas like maybe in the mainstream it's still like absolutely roaring because it is like a paradigm shift. All that to say, what is the opinion on AI capabilities as of 2023 on your industry? And how do you see that changing things?
That is really funny. Like I'm on Twitter all day, and I have been for years, but I really don't have a lot of personal close friends who are on Twitter. Like we're on Twitter, but the rest of the world really isn't. It doesn't have that many users compared to the other stuff. So there's a big gap there. Honestly, I don't know about the AI stuff. Like I think it really just helps with the basic test. And like that's where people are at right now. And so I think people are using it to better proofread and edit their stuff. They're using it to answer questions, do Excel formulas. But I haven't seen someone consistently use advanced applications like, you know, write me a newsletter from scratch, write me a blog post from scratch. That's actually good. And I think there's people like you are kind of more on the cutting edge of how to do that. But right now, for most people and me, it's just a time saver.
Do you have like any kind of extrapolated? Do you think like that's just like, what do you think 2 years from now people will be saying, or 5 years from now?
I don't know. I'll tell you where it's helped us is on like the ad creative side. Almost the image generators and voice generators have been more helpful than text generation like ChatGPT. So like we're making ads all the time that have AI in them. I don't even realize it half the time. Like our background images and images of people, like they're just AI generated, or we're using AI generated voices to make video ads with. And so I think that's helped us a lot on creative production, saving time, and also just making things that are better than they were before. But it hasn't changed written content as much as I might imagine.
I'll echo the images, especially with Dolly 3. We have a client that we're doing a newsletter for, and I needed to make like a sign-up page for him. And it's about music festivals. So I was like, couldn't find a good stock image of like people at a music festival with kind of the right lighting and the right vibe. And I just like one shot got something absolutely perfect and just like, bam, send him the landing page. He's like, this is gorgeous. I'm like, do what I can. So
yeah, that's
I love
really,
it.
That's like thumbnails for things. Like, it's perfect because it is.
Oh, yeah.
It saves you so much time on stock images. So I think every designer is already using it. Every like writer is already using it, but they're using it as more of an editor at this point, unless they're churning out a lot of articles that are more like SEO focused. But again, like, I'm not really on the cutting edge. Like, I'm more about building a team. And like, well, the funny thing is so fragmented right now. It's like, at these big media companies, every writer and journalist is using AI, but they're all kind of using it on their own time, and they're not really telling their bosses because it's kind of taboo right now. So I think maybe what will happen in the next 6 to 12 months is there's more standard processes for like how we should actually use it instead of everybody doing their own thing and being quiet about it.
I think last couple of questions here. I want to ask about App Creative. I think that's like a big next milestone or next like big unexplored territory for me, kind of as in my professional career, is just I've not used paid advertising to drive much attention for anything that I do. And I think that's a missed opportunity. What is kind of, I mean, I don't totally know how to make this into a short question, but you use memes for ads and that's really cool. Maybe you can talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, it relates to a broader point because when you want your ad creative to not look like an ad. I think that's the secret. And that's why memes often work really well, is because they don't look like ads. And so you want your ad creative to look native to the platform it's on. So if it's on Instagram or Facebook, it should look like something you would see on those platforms. So if it's on Twitter, it should look like a popular tweet. And so that is the game that you're playing. And what I've done well and what my team has done well is just we're constantly up to date on what's working on those platforms and we're testing new stuff. And so like a big thing that looks really native on Facebook and Instagram is short form video, like TikTok style content, reel style content. So we make ads that are in those styles. We use the same background music that they do organically. We use the same fonts. We use similar hooks, but instead of an organic post, it is for a product, right? And so that's the secret. Memes work well on Facebook and on Twitter too, because people post those organically on Instagram as well. When you look at like Twitter ads, a lot of the things that we do is we look at like, what are the viral hooks that people are using for threads and for long form tweets? What are like the top Twitter creators? What are the most popular tweets? And how can we use that same angle as an ad? And so it really comes down to making your stuff look organic.
I think that's super helpful. Like if all you knew about ads was that, you'd be in a decent spot. I think that's also kind of uncovered two or more like niche newsletter ideas. Like I love swipe file newsletters that are like 5 ads that kicked ass last month. Like a newsletter like that, I love those. Or and then you sub-niche that, right, as well. It's like 5 Facebook ads that kicked ass last month, 5 Twitter ads that kicked ass last month. And you just have the different niches for like the different ad platforms.
Yeah, I've seen like 2 grow really fast doing exactly that. One is called The Marketing Professor. And I think George Mack, who runs that, he's built that Twitter account to like tens of thousands of followers and the newsletter to tens of thousands of subscribers in just like a couple months. Basically just sharing ad inspiration. And there's other ones who have done it at a smaller level too. So I think that newsletter will be really big. And it works. You know, like my friend Alex Garcia, he has a newsletter with like 100,000 subscribers now. And it's basically all marketing case studies. He calls it like Harvard Business Review for marketers. And a lot of it is ad creative breakdowns. So I don't know if you can build a business on that alone, but it's a great starting point if you want to get into a newsletter and that's what you want to do.
I mean, you could sell, the sponsorships are pretty straightforward there with what you could sell, but we could chat newsletters all day, and I appreciate the amount of time we spent doing it. Matt, where are you? You said you're on Twitter all day. You have a newsletter. You have a service. Let's plug it.
Thanks, man. This is fun. So the best place is newsletteroperator.com. That is my website where you can find and subscribe to my newsletter. You can find my agency there. You can find Twitter and LinkedIn. And those are the 2 social platforms I'm active on, Twitter and LinkedIn. So I'm at, if you just search Matt McGarry, you'll find me on both those.
That's with 2 R's.
That is right.
Okay. I was trying to find you doing research. I'm like, did this guy disappear? I'm like, why did he say yes to the podcast if he was planning on going off the grid the next day? I was like, I just can't spell. So problem solved. Well, Matt, appreciate you coming on the show. It's been a blast.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me on. This is fun.
That wraps up this interview with Matt McGarry. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you had as much fun as I did. A couple takeaways for me. 1, love the treadmill. Leave me a comment if I sound too out of breath or something, but I don't know. I enjoyed it. That made the podcast so fun. Man, I got 63 minutes of cardio in and 3 kilometers, according to the Apple Watch. So fun stuff. I think 3 takeaways for me, and then I'll let everybody do whatever it is that they were doing and proceed with their day. 1, he said it right there at the end. You want your ad creative to not look like an ad. I feel like that's the 80-20 for advertising. Maybe not 80-20, but that's like super valuable. It's like, never forget that is what I would say. Good takeaway. 2 is as an agency service, you want to stay close to the money. It's obvious, right? It's like, if you can make it really clear what the return on investments of your service is, it's going to be a lot easier to sell that service. The way anyone makes any buying decision is if the perceived value of your service or expected value exceeds the cost. and if it exceeds it tremendously, whereas it seems obvious that it's going to help them make $100,000 and you're only charging $1,000 for it, they're going to be like, oh my goodness, this is the best deal of all time. So that's takeaway number two, and it's a hard lesson to learn if you don't listen to me and decide to try it at your own peril. Number three, content is content. And what I mean by that is that everyone sees something new come out and they think it's something new. So newsletters are becoming trendy, but what does that mean? They're just, you know, different. Humans are still humans, right? Human psychology doesn't change tremendously over history. And for that reason, the types of content in terms of books or YouTube or tweets, the reason someone reads a book, the reason someone follows a Twitter account, the reason someone follows a YouTube account, it's kind of all the same thing, or the same big collection and list of reasons of things. To learn about a topic, to stay informed about a topic, to be ahead of the curve on a topic, to be entertained, to be amused, all of those different things. So it's important to not treat newsletters as if they're something at all different. Obviously, there's finesse and there's niche expertise, but I think in general, thinking from a principal's point of view and the fundamentals is helpful. So I think that's just a good lens for thinking about any marketing is like, really, there's some fundamentals and they don't change that much. So the more you learn the fundamentals, the more the specific, right? The more you learn the general unchanging, the more the specific will come naturally to you. That's everything for me. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you have a fantastic rest of the day. If you want more from us, we got like 200 other episodes. Wherever you found this one, you can find those. I'm online. I'm on Twitter. I got a bunch of businesses and I'm easy to find on the internet. And thanks so much for watching the Lewis and Kyle Show. I would encourage you to watch another one if you enjoyed this one, because it's kind of the same style. So if you like this, you like that one too. Anyway, I'm rambling, and that's because I'm on a treadmill. So you have yourself a good one. I'm signing off now. See ya.